Our August sponsor, MediCrest, announces its Future Research Leaders Fellowship, a 7-month international fellowship designed to prepare the next generation of research leaders. Fellows receive advanced training in research methodology, biostatistics, systematic reviews, meta-analysis, scientific writing, and AI-powered research while working with international mentors and a global network of researchers. To celebrate the 20th anniversary of MediCrest, the inaugural fellowship is offered at no cost to selected participants. Applications open August 1st and close October 1st, 2026. Learn more and apply at MediCrestAI.com/fellowship. Thank you, MediCrest, for your continued support of the Practical Significance Podcast, and congratulations on your milestone anniversary.
Hello, and welcome to Practical Significance, a podcast to inspire listeners with compelling stories from statistics and data science and to propel data-driven careers forward. Here are your hosts, the ASA's Associate Executive Director, Donna Lalonde, and Executive Director, Ron Wasserstein.
Welcome, everyone, to the August edition of Practical Significance. I say this all the time because we always have wonderful guests, but I just have to say that education is where my heart is. And so anytime that we have the chance to talk with some of our statistics education research stars, it is absolutely wonderful for us. So Ron and I are delighted to welcome Nick and Anna to talk with us about a recent National Academies report, The Data and Computing in K-12 Education, Foundational Competencies 2026. And so, as we always do, we're going to start by asking them to tell us about their day job, or probably for these two, more appropriately, their day jobs. So, Nick, we'll start with you.
Well, thank you very much, Donna, and I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this report, which is near and dear to my heart with my interest in statistics and data science education. I'm a professor of statistics and data science at Amherst College, where I've been working both as a biostatistician to kind of help ensure that science is on a good foundation and to kind of develop new statistical methods, and then really to be thinking about aspects of pedagogy. How do we teach the next generation to take advantage of the data that surround them? But again, that's what really gets me excited. That's what I've been doing.
That's great. And Anna, your day jobs.
So I am a professor of mathematics, statistics, and data science at Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles. And like Nick, I wear different hats in my research work. I am a practicing statistician, and I do a lot of work with social statistics, particularly related to education with large data sets. And then also like Nick, I have a great passion for education in particular, and both curriculum development, teacher preparation, and just guidance in the field of statistics education.
Thanks very much. Well, we're really excited to do a deeper dive into the report. And so, Nick, let me start with you and ask, what was the motivation for convening the committee? Also, more importantly, why now?
Yeah, that's a great question, Donna. And just to remind folks that, as is true for all National Academies consensus reports and the like, they're available for free download. You can set up an account and access them. You can purchase a nice printed copy if you want, but they're intended to be widely disseminated. It's no surprise, I think, to any of us that over the past few decades, data and computing have permeated almost all aspects of our lives. And these implications of this for our society and for the teaching of the next generation was really what spurred folks to say, this is the time when we need to be thinking about how to more coherently prepare K-12 students to be utilizing data to make decisions and utilizing computing to process and work with those data. This is not news to statisticians. I always love looking back at John Tukey, who wrote in 1962, "Come to feel my central interest is in data analysis." And the lots of work happening, 60 years ago at this point, Seymour Papert's Mindstorms, which was really focused on Children, Computers, and Powerful Ideas, talked about how back in the 1980s, 70s, that computing was ubiquitous. And we've seen kind of this development. Unfortunately, there have been parts of our curriculum that have not moved as quickly as we need. And so I think this was really try to explore what some might describe as a messy garden that is starting and trying to do things, but not doing it in a coherent way.
Thanks, Nick. Anna, many of our colleagues have not experienced what it's like to be on one of these committees. Share with us the reality of what goes on, what the work is compared to what people might picture. And while you're at it, what surprised you the most about being involved in a consensus study project?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's very different than anything I had experienced before. And I have had some experience sort of writing national level reports, but a consensus report is truly just that. It's really a consensus. There are procedures in place to converge on ideas. There are processes for sharing ideas. There are processes for writing and editing, and everything has to be evidence-based. So it's quite different than other work that when you're trying to lead the field in some way, in many ways, this is a building from what there is and trying to put it in a coherent consensus, essentially. One might have opinions about something, but if there's not enough evidence to support it, then it really cannot be part of the report. Also, one thing I was actually quite surprised about was how much of the process was conducted in person, which was a huge benefit. We had many meetings in person, which then you can really understand where people are coming from. How many were we, Nick? I think we were 22, something like that, 20, around 20, having that many opinions and that many people coming from different sides to converge. It provided convergence much quicker when we were in person face to face. It was also just really, truly delightful to meet people from different disciplines and different angles coming at this in person over a big span of time. So you get to know people and quite well. So those are some interesting spots about the process.
Yeah, that's got to be a fascinating process. As you were talking, I was realizing how many times I can't even come to a consensus with myself. So I can imagine the challenges of having a group.
Nick, the committee was charged with identifying the competencies needed for students to navigate and succeed in the changing data and computing landscape, and with describing the role that K-12 education can play in the development of these competencies. And that's actually a direct quote, so I wanted to make sure that we got that out there accurately. Can you talk to us about some of the insights on how the committee reached the consensus that Anna was also just
Yeah.
describing on these foundational competencies? Because they're
Yeah.
quite interesting.
Well, thank you. And again, I agree completely with Anna's take on that. It was a remarkable process that was really kind of centered on a remarkable group of committee members who are coming from different diverse backgrounds and experiences, science educators, CS educators, engineering, quantum, folks from the learning sciences, folks from the more traditional math, statistics, data science, folks with district experience and state level industry, and as well as academia and teacher preparation. To have that group be able to think holistically about what was needed was pretty remarkable. The consensus process felt a lot like, as chair, herding cats. We had feisty, smart people bringing all sorts of ideas and to kind of help figure out how to move that forward. What was really valuable to us was how much existed already. When we think about the standards documents and the guidance that we have for curricula that's developed, I know the ASA has been really involved in a lot of those initiatives over the decades. The GAES K-12 report that complements the GAES College report, the SET, the Statistics Education of Teachers report, as well as things like the Common Core in Mathematics, the Next Generation Science Standards. The Data Science for Everyone has had some really helpful guidance about thinking about data science in K-12, and the Computer Science Teachers Association with their computing recommendations for K-12 are wonderful documents that are so not integrated. And they use sometimes different language for different things, and they're not reflected. And so, for us to have this opportunity to bring this group together and to develop these seven competencies was pretty remarkable. This might be a good time, Donna, to share what those competencies are for readers who haven't had a chance to do it. We ended up identifying a first competency that was problem posing and problem solving processes. And for each of the competencies, we described components of those competencies, examples at different grade bands, as well as kind of describing them in more detail. Competency two was producing and working with data, starting to think really early on for students about how aspects of data production and data wrangling were valuable. Competency three were aspects of abstraction, algorithmic thinking, and automation, which is a big part of what computing has been bringing forward in recent years. Competency four was probabilistic and inferential reasoning, probably what might feel most straightforward for statisticians. But then building from that into competency five, models and representations. The world is highly multivariate, and these things are not as simple as they have been traditionally taught. How do we get students going beyond what we've been thinking about in K-12, but to really realistically how data and computing are used? Competency six was technology and society, all sorts of issues that we need students, the next generation, to be thinking about. And then last but not least, competency seven were data and computing systems, understanding some of the mechanics and nuts and bolts about these. This process of having this group really wrestle with all these standards and try to come up with something more coherent is something that I'm pretty proud of how that came together, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it will be implemented.
So thanks, Nick. I'm going to follow that up with a question for both of you. Maybe Anna, we could start with you. So you didn't exactly have small asks in this report. You definitely were swinging for the fences. And the report calls for sustained coordinated action across curriculum, teacher prep, professional learning, technology access, assessment, and system level coordination. That's a lot of levers. So for a school district or a state curriculum committee that can only focus on one or two of those things, where would you tell them to start? Anna, let's start with you.
So I think in all of these, you're right. There's definitely a lot of levers going on. I do think if one thinks of it from the competency point of view, let's say that they should be an anchor to everything, it becomes more feasible to tackle them because you kind of have the anchor and then everything goes out from that. And it's not necessarily sequential. It comes off from those competencies. So curriculum focused on the competencies, teacher prep focused around the competencies, teacher professional learning, the competencies, technologies to support the competencies and assessment, et cetera, to support the competencies. So structuring everything around them, I think, would provide continuity and actually make it easier to think about all the pieces that are happening. Then for me, and just my background, which is probably no shock to anybody, but I would say focusing on teacher prep is probably the most important in my book to start with. But just because in my personal opinion, it's everything else sort of follows from the teacher prep. It's pretty hard to go from other things and catch that one up later. So I would start there if I were a district or a state.
Yeah, I would just agree with Anna's kind of sense that teacher preparation is so important. The teachers haven't had these experiences with data and computing that we want them to convey to students. And I think that there's some creative ways for us to be doing that. That's certainly one of the important areas. And Ron, it's true that this report has so many different audiences. There are kind of curriculum developers and states, but there are also some really important things for associations like the ASA or others to kind of think about how to help think beyond just their own work in these other areas. And I think that's an area where, you know, the ASA has been really active in connecting and engaging across some of these areas. But I'm hoping that this would help people understand better the potential for what is happening in K-12 and what could happen for all students. As Anna said earlier, everything in the report was evidence-based, brought forward through a very rigorous review process. And we had lots of examples of things that were happening, existence proofs. But again, it wasn't the case that this was being available to all students and teachers and districts. And that's the area where I'm hoping there can be focus to kind of bring this more broadly, not just to a small set of students.
So thanks, Nick and Anna. I'm still marveling at this process, as I always do, and thinking about how there must have been some ebb and flow along the way, and maybe moments where you wondered if you would be successful or not. But was there a moment that you can point to where the group's thinking shifted from where it started to another place or another direction? Was there a sea change, an inflection point that you observed?
It's interesting because, as you all know, Nick was our lead, and I wonder if from a lead position, it's different. So as a contributor, I would say there's not. We were shifting till the end and still kind of going back and forth on a lot of things and small things as verbiage, small as actual verbiage and big as actually like phrasing of the main description of a competency. We converged pretty quickly, I think, on the actual competencies themselves. It was just the description and how they play out into the different fields, let's say. And that was a little bit more challenging, I think. But I'm interested to see what Nick thinks from your point of view, because you were kind of getting all the input and having to do something with it.
A journey of the reward is a big part of this process. The way the process was set up in general, which is true for all of them, not just ours, is there's often lots of subgroups that are working on things, trying to get some ideas on paper, because it's very true that we reached a kind of a rough sense of where we were. But the devil is in the details. And to kind of like get that working and then try to figure out, and then what are the examples? What are the evidence behind this? Can we justify this recommendation? Can we provide support for this conclusion that we're seeing? To kind of bring those things together and to try to do it in a way that's still a comprehensible, we're at 300 pages in the report. So it's a long beach read. But again, I'm very proud of having that come together. But it really was a tremendous effort facilitated by a really talented staff and then these subject matter experts, as well as the folks we invited to our open sessions to share updates and wisdom and things that we really need to be incorporating early on. So again, it felt like it was never ending at some level, but it did finally all come together.
It's great fun to hear you both reflect back on the experience. So, Anna, you and I have worked together a lot. And so I think you know about me that I'm a big believer in serendipity. So I'm going to ask you a little bit of a question around serendipity. You have done so much for the ASA in terms of advancing our education initiative. So work on GAYS, work on SET, both SET 1 and SET 2, and then your other research and work with teachers. I'm just wondering, is there something that ended up from all of your contributions to the report that you didn't expect going in? What was the serendipitous moment for you?
Well, I think the folks at the National Academy selected a group of people that really brought different things to the table. The way all the pieces fit together, maybe we're not apparent like meeting one, but as we went along in the process, it really, they all made sense. So they did it, I think, an amazing job of their selection. And I think the reason why I probably was selected and why I was in the room was because of the work I've done with the ASA on GAYS and SET in particular and other stuff that I've worked on. And I definitely feel like those messages got through and were supported by the group and Nick, of course, as the lead and contributed greatly to what ended up in there. I also always feel like when you're somebody that works with data daily, your approach is a boots on the ground approach always because you're doing it as well. And so that for myself, that really helps the way I think and it really helps me shape the way I think, even though obviously I'm practicing and not a K-12 level, but at the same time, you kind of understand the processes that you work with and that problem-solving process that we engage in when you work with data. And I think that really came through in the report. So I wouldn't say there was anything unexpected. I think I was in the room for a purpose, and hopefully I did enough of a good job to make the contributions known.
No doubt that you did. You both have mentioned the ASA's contributions to education, and obviously, you know that it is very important to us. And so I want to think about teachers, so the professional learning for teachers who are being asked increasingly to teach data and computing concepts, probably with not much training in both those areas. How do you see moving forward the ASA initiatives could contribute to ongoing professional development? So I know you both know well what we do. What should we be doing as we look to the future? And Anne, I'll start with you and then we'll pass it to Nick.
Sure. So I would love to see the ASA being even more active than it already is in the area. I think the ASA does wonderful things in the area of contribution. I think there's always room for more. As Donna, you're mentioning, for example, ASA puts on the Stats and Data Net, which is a great professional development conference development for teachers. It also has many other initiatives through the Ed Council at the different levels, as well as K-12, but also post-secondary. The ASA has journals like the Statistics Teachers Journal, which is geared towards K-12, But then there's also sections in the Journal of Statistics and Data Science and also the American Statistician that also take on education pieces as well. So all of these resources teachers can use to help prepare them. And the SEP 2 report is about to come out as well this summer and early fall. So that also is kind of aligned with the National Academies report. And what I would love to see the ASA moving forward doing more of is just leaning into the policy more surrounding education. Policy around education dictates a lot of what happens in the classrooms and kind of trickles down. And I think the more the voice of professionals and people that are leaders in that content area, the better off we are in terms of the policy that's made surrounding it. So that's what I would say in the future. I would love to see the ASA do even more of what they do, which would be great.
I would agree with Anna that there's lots of great things that are happening through the ASA education initiatives. I'm the former editor, so I may be biased of the Journal of Statistics and Data Science Education, but that is an open access journal that I think provides a really valuable place for some of these conversations for the future. The statistics teachers, a lot of the joint committees that the ASA has. I think those initiatives, along with the curricular guidance through things like SET and the Gays College and Gays K-12 reports, kind of really help the profession and are really important work of the association.
I want to quickly go back to something you said, Anna, about the good work that referring to the ASA that you were doing. You said there's no you here, it's we. You guys exemplify the level of volunteerism that makes the ASA excel. So we really appreciate that. There are probably people listening to this podcast who are thinking, wow, I think we're going to get all the way through a podcast without AI being mentioned. Well, you're wrong. The artificial intelligence is explicitly one of the fields the foundational competencies are meant to underpin. How did the committee think about that? How did the committee think about AI literacy? Nick, let's start with you.
AI literacy is obviously a quickly moving and shifting thing, even over the 2 years that we were working as a committee. Obviously, there's also a growing use of AI by students and teachers in K-12 that we don't really know so well or can characterize. Just we know it's there, we know it's happening, and we know it's accelerating. What we felt was really critical is that students engage in learning experiences about AI, that it's not something they can just kind of like leave aside. They need to kind of be thinking about it. And that to really have these opportunities to learn about the tensions, the limitations, the risks of AI. And so this is a place where, obviously the ASA has some guidance there, the Statement on Ethical AI Principles, really thinking about these kind of stochastic things where data quality and kind of ethical considerations show up. Our models and representations competency explicitly called out large language models, as well as weather models or other kind of sophisticated scientific predictions, climate change. These are things that students, even though they're not going to be building such models necessarily, they're going to be using them. They're using them in their K-12 and they're going to be using them in the workforce. It's not so specific. I think it was premature for us to kind of lay out a curriculum for what that should look like. But again, there are key statistical principles about data quality in particular, about uncertainty and variability, prediction error that I think were ones that we need students to be addressing. And to kind of be doing that not just as a kind of an add-on in high school, but something that's really built in early on in elementary.
Yeah, I'll piggyback on what Nick said. I totally agree with everything. That was pretty much what I was going to say as well. And then I would just reiterate that in a consensus report, you push on evidence-based. And with regards to AI, we tried to stick to what is known currently and push for what we think should be worked on, which is more research-based evidence for the use of AI in education and how and what and when and where it should be used, essentially. So without kind of that part of research being totally developed yet, it's hard to get, a big amount of things about this in a consensus report.
Thanks. And so I recognize that the question I'm about to ask is a terrible one to actually ask authors of a really amazing study. But Nick, if readers could only read one chapter in the report, what would you point them to and why?
I would say chapter 3, Donna, because that's the one that lays out these competencies. My background is as a biostatistician doing applied work, kind of getting a sense of what the parts and pieces that we really want to be thinking about that would be the competencies that underlie a solid understanding in K-12. I also teach at a university level, so kind of how to build on those things and to kind of really be doing that in a more coherent way. I think that chapter three would give people like a nice way of seeing a coherent way that these things fit together, some of which weren't included in the curriculum as a statistician that I had, but are really important now and moving forward.
I agree. I think it has to be the competency chapter. It's the crux of the entire report. So I'll keep it simple.
And we will make sure that we link to where the report can be downloaded in the show notes. I'm sure that we will be revisiting all of this in future education offerings from the ASA. So I look forward to that as well.
So thank you all. Now let's reflect a bit, imagining ourselves to be 5 years out from this report. For you, what would success look like in terms of the impact of the report 5 years on? So Anna, we'll start with you and then we'll swing over to Nick.
I would love to see more cohesiveness in the teaching and learning of statistics, data science, and computing throughout K-12, particularly the elementary grades and also moving forward all the way up. To me, success for this particular report is that educators and policymakers are using the report as a resource to build on. So it is an actual resource that people are looking at to build upon when they're moving forward with their work.
My answer would be really the same: integration. Looking at these things in a more cohesive way, coherent way, as Anna noted. Just as one example I always think about is teaching of models, mathematical models, statistical models, how computer scientists think about models, how engineers think about models, how scientists think about models. These are all different, but talking about the same thing at some level. Providing a more coherent introduction so students see that more holistically about the kind of the strength and limitations and weaknesses of models, I think will be just really helpful. And as Anna also said, beginning earlier, a lot of this stuff we've waited too long for people to start to learn about. There were sophisticated methods, models that really weren't even taught until graduate school that are now kind of accessible to students early on, and I think can give them a sense of the power and magic of what can be done using the data that surrounds these students.
Well, this has been a fantastic conversation, and we always like to end with a question about, what are you reading, listening to, watching? So, Nick, I want to know about your TBR, all of the above. So what's on your list?
So I have a pairing here, Donna. I've been reading Jonathan Haidt's The Anxious Generation. I worry. It's as hard what these kids are dealing with, the lives that they have, the uncertainty. And so this anxious generation of how play-based to be phone-based kind of stuff is, I think, a big challenge for us as educators to be thinking about. But I've been balancing that with Gulred Khan's Drawing Data with Kids, because I think there needs to be art and joy along with dealing with the anxieties and things we're all wrestling with.
Those are great reads. Anna, reading, watching, listening, all of the above.
You're catching me in the summer. So my reading is all recreational at the moment. It is very light right now, full of summer beach reads and actual romance novels. I'm a pretty big romance novel junkie. So I go through about 15 books in the summer of romance novels. So I'm also a part of a pretty serious book club during the year, but I trade those books in the summer for the summer quick reads, which is what I'm doing. And as far as what I listen to, I also always listen to dance music and Latin music and then whatever my teenagers have on. So
do you want to give us a recommendation of a romance author?
Oh, I don't know. You have to figure that one out. But I think the Google search of, romance beach reads 2026 summer pop up a lot.
Okay, that's great. Well, thank you both for the contribution to the report, to all of your contributions to ASA education initiatives, both past, current, and future, because we certainly will depend on you moving forward. So we have another tradition on practical significance, and that is we always end with Ron's top 10. So I'll turn it over to my colleague, Ron, for the top 10.
Thank you, Donna. Well, the academic year is about to begin, and many graduate students may be starting to feel that they have been in grad school too long. Well, friends, I hear that. I've been out of grad school a long time, but I was in grad school for a long time as well. Too long. So, in case you have been feeling that you've been at it for too long, use my experience as a benchmark. Here are the top 10 signs I was in grad school too long. Number 10, my dissertation wasn't so much a work in progress as a long-term relationship with commitment issues. Number 9, my middle name was legally changed to ABD. Number 8, people stopped asking me when I was going to graduate and instead asked when I was going to retire. Number 7, I began thinking of myself as the Cal Ripken Jr. of grad school. Number 6, the new grad student orientation manual started including a section referring to me as a cautionary tale. Number 5, my desk in the grad student bullpen was labeled Hotel California. Number 4, during the celebration of my 10th year in grad school, the facility staff awarded me with a key to the building. Number 3, my graduate career spanned 4 different actors in the role of James Bond. Number 2, my thesis advisor was an assistant professor when I started, Professor Emeritus by the time I finished. And the number 1 sign I was in graduate school for too long, I had to hurry to finish grad school before my youngest child did. Well, that's it for another episode of Practical Significance. We look forward to continuing the conversation next month.
Distinguished colleagues, Medicris is pleased to introduce the Future Research Leaders Fellowship, a 7-month international program designed to prepare the next generation of research leaders for the age of artificial intelligence. The fellowship brings together research methodology, biostatistics, AI-powered research tools, mentorship, and international collaboration. Its aim is to help selected fellows develop the knowledge and practical skills required to conduct high-quality scientific research and produce meaningful scientific outputs. This program is especially meaningful for Medicris, as the organization will celebrate its 20th anniversary next year. To mark this important milestone and give back to the global research community, the inaugural Future Research Leaders Fellowship will be offered completely free of charge. All educational and program-related costs for selected fellows will be fully covered by Medicris. For Medicris, this is not simply a scholarship. It is an investment in the next generation of research leaders. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Practical Significance, the podcast of the American Statistical Association. A new episode will be coming your way next month from AmStat News, the ASA's monthly membership magazine.